Graham, I'd like to now focus on TCM and its treatment of prostate health, and particularly explain the differences between Western medicine approach and the Chinese medicine approach.
Western medicine, it tends to focus on the identification of the physical symptoms of disease, and then it applies a label or condition to those symptoms. And once the condition's identified, it's a matter of applying known remedies, usually in the form of drugs or various medicines, to eradicate the symptoms. Therefore, we could say that Western medicine is symptomatic and condition-based in its approach, where all patients with the same conditions and the same symptoms are prescribed with the same treatments. TCM is rather different to that, and it identifies and treats patterns of an illness. And each of those patterns may contain many symptoms. And some of those symptoms may or may not be the same symptoms that are identified in Western medical terms. But in TCM, patients who may have the same conditional symptoms as typically identified by Western medicine may actually be prescribed totally different treatments. And the reason for this is the objective of TCM is to treat the root cause of the illness, which is identified as the disease pattern. And these patterns are the basis of TCM and reflect its understanding of how illness is caused and how it progresses and how it actually manifests itself and affects other systems in the body. There's a famous saying in TCM, which is different diseases, same treatment, and same disease, different treatments. This illustrates the fundamental approach, where you can have, be giving a treatment, the same treatment to multiple patients, but they've actually all got different diseases, and vice versa. In terms of the physics of Western medicine and Chinese medicine, there are some very critical differences. The science of Western medicine evolved from the principles of physics discovered in the 18th century by Sir Isaac Newton, known as the Newtonian mechanics. Contemporary medicine still adheres to this several hundred year old principle, and its principles hold fast to those precise and scientific theories of cause and effect, and the dynamics of objects based on materialism, reductionism, and determinism. In contrast to that view, TCM adheres very much to the principles of quantum mechanics, which focuses on energy more so than matter. And in quantum mechanics, the principles of energetics, of holism and of uncertainty represent its basic philosophy. Although contemporary physics is based on quantum mechanics, Western medicine does not embrace its principles and concepts. So to me, that's one of the major differences between the two. The study of TCM, just like Western medicine, takes many, many years of learning and clinical experience before becoming a proficient practitioner. In fact, some years ago, I visited one medical school in Beijing in China where the TCM course is actually an 8-year full-time course. And it's also interesting to see, and I spoke firsthand to many of the doctors in China who have actually spent many, many years of formal study studying both Western medicine as well as TCM, and who use the best of both in treating their patients. This is not something we actually see in the West.
Now, Graham, let's kind of drill down and talk a little more specifically about prostate and prostate disorder from a Chinese traditional medicine standpoint.
Firstly, I've already mentioned that TCM is not based on Western medicine's understanding of anatomy and physiology. And it's important to realize that. Instead, TCM has evolved from an energetic understanding of how the various energy systems in the body interact together in a synergistic fashion, whereas the various energies actually support each other, in forming and supporting the body and in also in maintaining and restoring itself. So, therefore, it's not going to come as any surprise to anyone. The classical TCM textbooks do not make any specific reference to the prostate gland because their focus is not on anatomy and physiology as we understand it in the West. Now that doesn't mean that TCM doesn't have a strategy to deal with this particular problem. Because to TCM, it's a matter of balancing the body and looking at the various energies and what's out of balance and trying to bring it back into balance. So I can give you a couple of examples of some prostate problems and how TCM may regard it. Now, I'm going to use terminology of Chinese medicine, and this is not an exercise or a study in learning Chinese medicine, but I'll just give you some examples of what the TCM doctor would be thinking about. Firstly, prostate enlargement or benign prostatic hyperplasia, or BPH, as it's called. The typical TCM patterns associated with this condition that the TCM doctor may see consist of a number of things. For example, blood stasis. Now, what this means is the blood is not moving adequately through the body. Now, that may sound strange to most Western people, but movement of blood is one of the key things that the TCM doctor will look at. And if I further mention to you that blood is the most yin form of energy in the body, you can see that its proper movement is an important part in balancing things. Back to the principles of yin and yang that I guess most people have heard of, and they're the broad concepts of balance, of yin and yang. But within that, there's lots of complexities to further differentiate the states of balance. So another thing you may see is the particular energy of the meridians themselves, which is called the Jing energy. It perhaps is not moving properly. You may also see the qi or the energy of the liver is not functioning properly. And the liver and kidney are not balanced together. And there typically can be a deficiency of a particular energy within the liver and kidney working together. The kidney and the spleen also can get out of balance and provide another key clue to the TCM practitioner. And there can be general dampness in the body. Now, some of these words that I've just said to you, you may think they're familiar, such as liver, kidney, spleen, but you need to consider that in TCM, these words, while they may describe a particular organ, they have a significantly wider meaning in TCM because they represent the entire energetic systems of these particular areas of the body. And it doesn't mean that there's a problem with the liver or a problem with the kidney, but it means that the entire energetic system stemming from or supporting that particular organ system is not functioning correctly. And so they represent the entire energetic function of that system, not simply the organ itself, as in Western medical terms. Another condition I can look at is prostate inflammation or prostatitis. The typical TCM patterns associated with this may well be a deficiency of kidney energy and say damp heat in the, I'm going to say the lower heater, which is probably not going to mean much to you, but the whole system of energy production in Chinese medicine, it actually has three levels, the upper, middle, and lower heater, they're called. And if you have problems in any of them, it can manifest itself in causing problems in quite a number of areas of the body. So this is just typical things that the TCM practitioner may find in his diagnosis.
Graham, you touched on the dietary issues related to Chinese medicine before, but perhaps you can offer a little more comment or insight into the general concept of dietary therapy for TCM.
Firstly, TCM has evolved through thousands of years of experimentation, observation, and documentation. And it's primarily, as I mentioned before, about achieving and maintaining balance. Now, apart from any unfortunate genetic problems that people may have, the reason our body gets out of balance is primarily due to diet, lifestyle, and emotional state. And these three factors play a critical role in TCM diagnostics and therapeutics, and are typically the first things that the TCM practitioner will explore with patients. The dietary therapy is a very thorough and advanced part of TCM. All of the foods have an effect on the body in some way. And TCM has actually classified all the foods based on flavors and their effects and their actions on the body. And bear in mind that TCM has been using this dietary approach for a very long time. And today it's still a critical part of the Chinese culture as well as Chinese medicine. It's not based on the inclusion or the exclusion of any one thing in the diet. It's based on finding the right combination of foods that, when eaten together in their whole form, will help to maintain health. So to the Chinese, it's not about adding or excluding fat, cholesterol, protein, salt, etc. It's more about finding the proper balance in the diet. And that balance will change with the seasons, with the person's present energetic state, and also if that person becomes ill. In contrast to that, the diet therapy in the West is, by comparison, very much in its infancy. We tend to mistakenly think that by taking a single supplement or by eating more or less of one type of food, our health will improve. The multitude of dietary approaches that we have in the West is evidence of this critical attitude.
Graham, perhaps you can discuss the treatment approach for prostate disorders.
TCM treatment is a very lengthy and complex subject. And the main reason for such complexity is that it's not based on a symptomatic model, as is Western medicine. For example, there's no equivalent reference book, such as the Physician's Desk Reference, which enables Western doctors to look up a disease and identify standard treatments. In TCM, the treatment of each patient is more likely to be quite unique to that patient. The TCM practitioner will put together a treatment strategy using one or more of a combination of treatment therapies. And these therapies can be based on herbs, acupuncture, diet, lifestyle. And it focuses on addressing all of the presenting and diagnose patterns for that particular patient. And within each of these particular therapies, there will usually be major variations across patients. So from a TCM perspective, what cures a disease is not the TCM therapies and not the medicines and not the practitioner. It's more particularly the patient's own body that does the healing. And the TCM therapies simply bring the body into a state of balance so that it can get back to its normal state, which is health. From the perspective of TCM's own concept of energetic physiology, it's quite common to find that a number of meridian systems or energetic systems are likely to be involved in prostate problems. And I can give you some examples that could be present in people with prostate disorders. Examples include the liver, kidney, the spleen, another meridian called the conception vessel, the governing vessel, and another one called the penetrating vessel, which is classified as one of the eight extra meridians. So I don't expect you to understand what I've just said, but I'm just giving you some examples of what will go through the mind and the observations of the TCM practitioner when he's confronted with somebody with prostate problems.
Graham, in the book, we discussed several TCM herbs. Each of the explanations are quite long, and so we don't need to get too involved, but perhaps in a summary, you can list some of the more important herbs that treat prostate disorders and why.
So some herbs that may be used by the TCM practitioner in prostate disorders could include the ones I'll mention to you. But as I'm saying this, please bear in mind that I'm not mentioning these as a standard symptomatic treatment. I'm simply giving you some examples to answer your question. And the first one that comes to mind is astragalus. And this is a very common ingredient found in many Chinese medicine prescriptions today. It's also found in many soup ingredients. It's a herb that's truly stood the test of time, and it's classified in Chinese medicine as one of its most superior herbs. It's been in use for a long, long time, thousands of years. And in terms of analyses that have been done on this by Western science, it's known to contain many compounds that have health-promoting properties, such things as amino acids and flavonoids and monosaccharides and polysaccharides and various trace minerals. It's also been found to stimulate the production of white blood cells. So astragalus is used in several Chinese medicine formulas for many disease patterns, and also as a preventive and treatment for cancer. It's also of interest that an extract of astragalus has recently been shown to activate a particular enzyme called telomerase, which extends the length of the telomeres at the ends of our chromosomes. And this has been proven to have a direct benefit on extending the lifespan by protecting the integrity of our DNA. So that's one example. Another example that you may have heard of is ginseng. Now, there's various different types of ginseng, and the one that is most beneficial is known as Siberian ginseng. And it's a small shrub that's native to Russia and China. And it's been used for hundreds of years in both China and Russia as a medicinal plant. It does contain various active chemical components which are quite different from those that have been found in American ginseng or Asian ginseng. And this particular ginseng has warm and bitter properties. Now, these are the energetic properties of this herb. And these particular properties can provide beneficial effects on various disease patterns associated with deficiency of qi or energy, some dampness, and also deficiencies in the spleen and the kidneys. And such disease patterns are very often present in patients with prostate problems. It's also been found that Siberian ginseng is an anti-inflammatory and also an antioxidant. And it's often used in prostate inflammation caused by bacterial or even viral infections. So that's another important one. Another one is green tea. Now, most people have heard of green tea. It's been consumed as a beverage and a traditional medicine for thousands of years, and it's now grown in many countries. However, it did originate in China about 4,000 years ago. And today there's many varieties of green teas available. Most of them come from China and Japan. It's well known to contain many different components, flavonoids and phenols and so on. And there have been numerous studies done on the ability of green tea to influence many different types of health problems. And these range from diabetes, metabolism of fat, high cholesterol, blood pressure, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and the list goes on. I know of one study done in China by the Curtin University of Technology in Perth in Australia on the protective effects of green tea on prostate cancer. And that particular study concluded that prostate cancer risk actually declined with increasing frequency based on green tea consumption. So green tea is an important, has important properties in dealing with disease states. Another one that people have probably heard of and think of is mushrooms. There's various types of mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms. One in particular is called the Ling Qi mushroom, and it's been used in TCM for perhaps over 2,000 years. It's also called the Reishi mushroom in Japan, and it's one of the most important and widely used ingredients in many TCM remedies. And this is due to the effects it has on being able to influence and monitor and manage the various energetic properties. In terms of Western medicine or Western science, it's been found to contain antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, and also immune-enhancing qualities. And also it's been proven in various countries to stop the progress of or have an influence on stopping the progress of tumor growth. Also in studies, it's demonstrated that this particular mushroom has a strong activity against breast and prostate cancer cells. So I'd like to conclude that by just saying, even though I've given you a number of things to think about, in our body, no single nutrient acts alone. And every one of our cells requires more than just a single nutrient to function optimally. The cellular functions actually depend on the supply of multiple nutrients. For millions of years throughout our history, we've actually consumed natural foods that each contain multiple nutrients. And our body has adapted and evolved based on such varied and wide-ranging consumption of nutritional foods. Today, as we know, it's beginning to differ There's a saying, you are what you eat, which I believe is quite true, but to be more correct, I would say you are what you ingest, digest, absorb, and assimilate. And some of the things we're putting into our bodies these days have a lot of very questionable and detrimental ingredients.
Graham, as we finish this audio section on Chinese traditional medicine, maybe you can comment on what do people do if they want to take the next step to understand the general area and they want to find a TCM practitioner?
I suggest that people start by contacting the appropriate registration or licensing body in their own country for TCM. And you could ask them for a list of practitioners in your particular area. You may also want to inquire as to the required education, qualification, and experience levels of TCM practitioners. To do that, you could call the professional associations that TCM practitioners will typically belong to in your area and ask them what the minimum qualifications are for their members. Unfortunately, each country has its own standards for licensing and registration of TCM. In some countries, and I know of two firsthand, which is Australia and Hong Kong, TCM is licensed at the government level. And to become licensed requires quite stringent educational qualifications as well as clinical practice and experience. So there's no easy path and particular way of finding them, but using a common sense approach and asking questions and finding out what associations people belong to and the requirements of those associations will lead you in the right direction.